Welcome to the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer here at the Masters, which is like none other. The Playbook's like none other when we have extraordinary guests like Alexis Belton. She is a world's long drive competitor. She is an amazing athlete, but more importantly, understanding the business of content is really what the long drive is about today.
It is, yeah.
And there's so many interesting aspects to it. What got you involved in the long drive competition?
Yeah, so I have a background of playing all sports, which is one thing I, when parents ask, you know, what's one advice? I go, let your kids play all the sports.
And so I agree with you, by the way.
I had that opportunity and I played basketball, had a D1 scholarship. And then my health teacher asked if I wanted to play golf. And I said, no, that's for old white guys.
True.
And he said, well,
you've been here at the Masters.
Yeah, I'm like,
definitely for old white guys.
And polos. And he said, well, you get out of school all day, you get free food, and we were eating at the gas station. We were like state champs eating at the gas station of basketball. And you get to pick your own outfits. And that's how I got into golf.
Nice.
My basketball coach told me it was a bad idea and that I couldn't get a D1 scholarship. So it was a challenge. I accepted it. Wound up walking onto a team, getting a scholarship, and then decided I wanted to play professionally. And in order to pay for playing professionally, I had to figure out some way to monetize because it's really difficult. It's really expensive.
Especially women's golf.
Yeah, women's golf is really expensive. So I signed up for the World Long Drive Championships and my goal was to come in eighth place. Came in eighth place, I'd be able to afford going to school, and came in third. And then after that, did the first tour event, won it, and thought, I'm going to do it all.
And amazing. And you have done it all. Now, when you started to learn about that, did you continue to play golf competitively at Q School?
I did. So I made it through the first stage Q School, went to second stage Q School, played LPGA Epson for a while, but then I did a few LET events and then played two seasons in Australia.
How many years did it take you from the time you started golf to become good enough to at least be considered a pro?
Man, I don't think I'm good enough now to be considered a pro. probably about 5-6 years.
Yeah. Golf is one of my favorite sports, not because I enjoy playing it more than football or other sports, not because I enjoy watching it, because for me, golf equates to life better than. My son is in golf less than 2 years, way better than I'll ever be. It's my ego because I can afford to do all the things that I used to tell my mom, well, if we were rich, I could have golf lessons and I know I could be better than all these people.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about golf to help him. I know enough about football too, and I have to keep my mouth shut. But I like it that he knows I don't know.
Yeah.
So he's not looking for advice. But what I do know is mindset. And especially in the last 2 years, driving around with him, watching how life parallels the game of golf, I've been able to coach him in life and apply it to golf. How much has all this golf helped you with your life?
I mean, to your point, if there's one thing, you had the best skills to teach him golf because you could teach him life. And so golf has taught me so much, from patience, from how to interact with people. We're on our phones all day. The beautiful part about the Masters is that you have to put your phone up and you get to
and
interact with people again.
The whole world did not crash
for like
when I picked up my phone.
You know?
At the check.
And so you get to be, you know, back and present again. And so golf has taught me so much about life, especially when it comes down to, I mean, I had a mental coach and really struggled through identity. It comes to who are you as a person? What are your values and how do you see the world? How do you see the course? And if you can have a positive mindset through that, and that doesn't mean toxic positivity, but like every time I hit a shot, we played Sage Valley not long ago, I hit it in the bunker, then hit it over, and I was like, I'm going to make this.
Yeah.
And I made it.
Yeah.
You know, if I hit a bad shot out of bounds, I go, oh, I can still make par from here. I can still make birdie from here. And so it's what you say, how you feel, and what are you going to do with it?
You know, it's interesting. I know Virgil Herring's here, PGA coach. Incredibly coaches PGA players. And he mentioned to me, he goes, you know what's so interesting about golf to me is it's the only sport where you're walking up to your ball and you say, I hope I don't chunk it.
Yeah.
Right? Or I hope. And he goes, have you ever gone up to a huddle and be like, I hope I don't fumble it when they call the play?
Yeah.
You never will.
No.
And I'm an optimist, but yet still we have this negative thought patterns at times. And compared to the positive ones, we're like, I'm going to sink this.
Yeah.
And this is the way for me that life works as well. The other part about it is bad shots. It's Everyone's going to have bad shots in life. But what's your next shot?
Yeah.
And the real winners, their next shot recovers, and or it just maintains, it's just a whole new game, every shot. In that respect, as now a businesswoman, because obviously in the long drive stuff, it's a business. It's content, publicity, community, all types of options and opportunities come from the exposure that you get.
For sure.
And you can make money, help people, and have fun doing it.
Yeah.
Is it still shot by shot by shot, or have you had a different lesson along the lines that golf has taught you?
The biggest change in my career from golf to long drive was when I won that first tour event. I held the trophy and I was like, this is it. And I know a lot of athletes have that moment. I never thought I'd have that moment. I was like, this is it. I thought what would happen was that I'd have a platform and be able to do all these different things. And the reality, you wake up the next day and it's the same thing.
Right.
And so what changed was my mindset towards the game. And that changed the thought of like business, of opportunities, of network. How am I connecting with people where I can bring out golf for good? Right. Like, what does that look like from the philanthropic side? How can I utilize golf to bring the people to, I do a lot of work in Kenya. So what does that look like being in the slums and teaching them golf in the slums versus and taking them to the country club? What does that look like to, you know, think outside of the box? And those opportunities also help in whether that be content or whether that be consulting or just helping. And so that's my passion now. And that changed my game for the better. It's just utilizing golf for good.
And I love anything for good, but golf for good is even better. And we do work. I'm the chairman of Unstoppable Foundation.
Oh, that's incredible.
In Kenya, doing work in the Maasai Mara, building villages and sustainable villages. In my biggest success in Kenya is we've left 17 villages. We've left them. They're sustainable.
That's incredible.
Water, healthcare, education, our own college, high schools, taking young girls that never could make it past 13 without being married to a guy my age, now are going to college for engineering, tourism. It's just an amazing feeling to be able to utilize my profession for good.
You know, one of the things that, you know, you say or you've mentioned is about, you know, making money to be able to empower others.
Yeah.
And, you know, also have fun, but
that's
helping people. Yeah. And I think that's so incredible because I, at first, being in golf and the business of it, especially as a female, I was like, oh, I just have to grind and make enough to live in order to fulfill my passion. And I think the difference of long drive and the difference of of learning of the business of golf was like, oh, my passion is helping people. If I can find ways, and that's why I'm getting back into long drive as an athlete versus doing broadcast and journalism. It's like, if I can be an athlete and have a platform, I can bring that to other people.
Yeah, I've made a transition in my life because I made a lot of money early and I was very commission driven. And I've always made money. And it was amazing when I lost everything. I bought a golf course, by the way, built one in Poplar Grove in Amherst. When it became my mission, the commissions followed.
Yeah.
And I became unabashedly confident in helping people make more money. My expertise is to help people make a lot of money for the sake of something good.
Yeah.
And have fun.
Yeah.
Don't take yourself so seriously.
That reminds me of in Kenya, the organization I work with. The gentleman used to live in the slum. He had the opportunity to come out. And I asked him, what's the biggest thing that changed? Like, you know, you were part of this organization. They helped you. They did this. He's like, it wasn't the money. It wasn't necessarily, you know, them taking us on trips and different things like that. He's like, someone told me that I didn't have to live the life that I have. And my mindset changed. Therefore, everything changed. And I broke all the generational curses. And so to your point, it's just
the energetic and genetic inheritance of that curse. And it happens here in America, too. And it may be a different level compared there. One of the other things in Kenya that I learned was there was people that had less than I even thought they had. And that's a lot less, like dirt and no water, 6 mile walks and like ridiculous conditions. And yet their spirit sometimes, a lot of times, their happiness was much greater than any of my friends in America that were multimillionaires.
Yeah.
Their gratitude, their perspective.
The joy.
And did you take away anything from doing what you've done in Kenya, but about your own personality of appreciation when you meet these people and you just see what true joy is, regardless of the commissions.
Yeah, I think, you know, fun thing, I just got back from there in February, and I took them camping, and they'd never been camping before.
That's amazing.
And to your point, it was really interesting because the camping experience as sleeping in tents was better than the experience that they have at home, the food, everything. And so one thing that I just realized as we were out there was they have a sense of who they are, not just as an individual, but as a community. And so they are raised in a village. They live with one another in a village, and they look after each other. And so coming back here, that's something that I've really taken hold of like, who is my village? Like, am I living communal with people? Because if that's the case, my life is not my own.
So beautiful, because your neighborhood's your frequency, and that frequency will determine the elevation of your awareness of what we're here to be part of.
Yeah.
Like, we're one. And it's so interesting. I've been on several missions and philanthropical trips, and you know, they're expensive. And I've taken my kids, and you'll meet some of my girls, or maybe already have. But Mia, my middle one, I remember going, and she said, "Dad, why is it that rich people pay to do what poor people have to do every day?"
Mm.
And I said, well, maybe that the poor people that have to do what they do every day actually have more purpose and joy, and they're trying to pay money to find that.
Yeah.
And camping was one of the things.
Oh, that's
a joke,
sweet.
Right? Like, people pay money to do that, you know, other people have to do, to live in a tent or live outside or whatever. Going to the long drive, it's interesting. How do you practice for the long drive? You only just hit driver, driver, driver?
I'm a little unconventional in the fact that for a long drive, a lot of people have different clubs. You can build a club
and
that fits you.
Right, yeah.
For me, I was playing at the same time, so I was the only one from the women's side that only used a standard driver. So I used whatever I was playing with.
Out of the bag.
Like, out of the bag. Let's go. 44 inches.
Didn't even go to the kingdom to get it done?
No. Went to go play there.
Yeah, right.
But what I learned was, and this kind of goes back to life, how I created more distance was by being more efficient, finding better width within my swing, and repeatedly hitting the center of the club face.
Right.
If I do that, I'm going to create more ball speed, swing speed. And that really helped me in long drive to create better distance, but then it also helped within playing golf. And the other thing that was really big is I do a lot of work with like a 7-iron, trying to get the speed up with a 7-iron. If I can do that, then I know my driver speed will be great and I don't have to do as many driver swings. And then a lot of wedges, learning how to control the club face. So
last thing real quick, and I know our friend Amanda Reese, I told her I wanted to do a reality show called The Event Planner.
Oh,
because there's so much drama, right? She'd be perfect for it.
So much drama.
She'd be so perfect for it, right? Okay, I got to give this one to you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I executive produce sports films
and
TV shows, right? So what do you think of this idea? You know how you remake it? So I licensed First and 10, the TV show that was on HBO
with
O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
We're going to do it in a whole different direction. But I like to remake things that people like.
Yeah.
How about this? We remake White Man Can't Jump.
Oh.
But what it's about, right, is you hustling people in golf.
I love that.
Right? So we come up and we're like, oh, you know, and we have like the other guy and you go out to the country club with all the rich guys. And then all of a sudden you're like, I bet you she can outdrive you. Like
that is part of my business model. You can't give away that secret.
Like, well, okay.
But,
don't look at this face. We got the street.
It's only a movie.
It's just for you.
I have one question for you that I am dying to ask. What is the most unexpected place that you made a deal or something that has like,
unexpected, like location, place, or
just a moment, place, anything?
I will tell you one of the coolest. This itself, there's so many layers of what I do at the Masters. This is the second most interesting place that I've done deals, because most people don't understand the amount of subtleties in what I do in all the different events, being able to manipulate people, celebrity badges, all the things that I do into this. But the ultimate was working with the NFLPA, best deal ever. They asked me to do the NFLPA locker room. So all the players that come to the Super Bowl would have a safe haven in a locker room.
Wow.
And then I sold places for like Nike Golf. We had the before Nike Golf went under, we had drivers.
That
we had,
blue driver was amazing.
Yeah. And so we would give, you know, these drivers and then bags. And I got 10 sponsors. And the NFLPA allowed me to do the event. So I got paid by the companies for them to give all the players, but I got credit because it was Sports One Marketing Lounge for the NFLPA. But I didn't take cash from the NFLPA. I took hotel rooms at the Super Bowl and Super Bowl tickets.
Wow.
So.
And then leveraging that.
And I got all this branding, all this content, right? It was all soft endorsements, right? Peyton Manning was walking around with a Nike driver, and people were asking, where'd you get that, Peyton? He would tell other players, Dave Meltzer, Warren Moon gave it to me. Sports One Marketing, right? The best, it was the coup of all coups at the biggest sporting event in the world that all of it, like we were making money and helping people every single way and building our brand.
It's like,
and we raised money for charity. Yeah, this was amazing. So that to me still was one of the greatest places in my business that I've been to be creative at. I love and live by, I'm not going to do it unless I can make a lot of money, but it's for the sake of sending my kid to college, buying my mom a house.
Yeah.
Today, it's for the sake of, I'm chairman of Unstoppable Foundation. Yeah. I'm the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute. I am the chief chancellor of Junior Achievement University. Those are my three biggest charities that I want to make a lot of money to help.
Yeah.
And then I will not do it if it's not fun. You will not see me not carrying Kenya Joy in my face.
Yes.
Because I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
If you have a low level of energy, I'm just going to walk away.
Yeah.
And pray for your happiness.
Yeah.
You can attack me all you want. You'll just protect me for people like you. So when I heard I got to talk to you, and I'm sure we're going to do a lot more, including our new movie.
Yes,
you got to think of the title. I don't know what it is, but it's not White Man Can't Jump. It could be Black Women Can Out-Hit You or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you can't. Yeah, it's got to be Black Women Can't Hit.
And then, plot twist. Yeah, plot. Just for the movies.
Golf.
Exactly.
Can't hit golf.
Yeah.
But no, it's been such a joy and really an honor.
Well, it's an honor for me, Alexis Belton, to be here at the Masters with our long drive champion. There is like none other. This is David Meltzer with The Playbook.